Next submitter, Donald Barnes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome.
I don't envy your task. And I'm in a wee bit of denial, so I better just get the glasses out. And if I fidget, you want me in front of this thing?
Yes, please. You don't have to stand up. You can just sit down.
No, I like to stand. And so if I'm fiddling and fidgeting with glasses, then apologies. Mm-hmm. And I also apologise for the notes. The staff at the door wouldn't let me in without handing in my very rough written notes. So if I'd known you were going to have a copy, I might have got someone to type them up for me. So apologies for that.
That's all right.
Look, I just want to say that, first and foremost, I'm a food producer. And I feed New Zealand and the world. In my farming career, and I haven't finished it yet, I will probably have 40 crops in my life. That's all. It's not a two-weekly paycheck. It's 40 opportunities to make income. I am sheep and beef farming. I am in Central Southland, and I like to think we do things fairly well. I just want to make some overall sort of statements, I guess, and then comment perhaps a little bit in detail on my submission. And then a bit of a summary and go forward.
Yep.
When I first read this document, I thought that the writer was very, very anti-farming. And I thought they were very specifically anti-livestock and especially large dairying. I note that it's called the Southland Water and Land Plan. So I put it down and I came back to try to read it a bit more objectively. This planet has supposedly been here for 4,000 million years. If you had one earthquake the size of Kaikoura every 500 years, and the ground moves 1 metre that way or that way or that way, in that period of time you'll be 8,000 kilometres from here. So we as humans probably think we like to control things, but we don't. We were only here for, the Romans were 2,000 years ago. So the very land we're standing on was underwater 60 million years ago, and a lot of it is sediment that has been washed off the mountains and down the rivers and deposited here. So that's a natural sort of an eco-cycle and system that has been going on for millennia. We're also probably standing in, in one of the most modified environments on the planet. Farms aren't this modified. I'd like to remind the panel and the regional council that Southland wealth was built on development. It was built on drainage, fertiliser and livestock. I'm not going to debate the issue of water quality and the science and all the rest of it. I'm just trying to paint a picture that, that's what's created the value in this province. Most of the activity in this province is around agriculture, sheep, beef, dairy, Tiwai aluminium smelter, obviously. But it too relies on water. And perish the thought, if the Waiau was returned to its natural state, what that would do for Tiwai. There's some tourism and the SIT brings in a large number of international students and others from throughout New Zealand. And while I'm on that, I'll just note that there is a proposal from a certain political party to change some rules around education, which could, with immigration and free fees, take 25 to 30% of the gross income off SIT. So don't rely on that one going forward either. I'd also like to note that the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Targets is set by Central Government. and Eric knows how this works. You're elected. Elections are won and lost by the Auckland population. So indirectly, Aucklanders are determining, through Wellington, what the policy statement on fresh water quality is. And I haven't done any studies, and I doubt that there's any been done, but I wonder how many Aucklanders actually want to swim in our rivers at any time of the year. But that's by the by. The previous submitter touched on the cost-benefit analysis, and I think anything that this plan does going forward should come with a full cost-benefit analysis and a lot of thought into the unintended consequences. The primary sector in Southland is about 24% of the Southland regional GDP. It's close on $1 billion. Now, again, the unintended consequences of some of the proposed strategies in this plan, don't know, but it could reduce that by 10%. That's $100 million out of circulation in this economy. Invercargill is a service town. So if that's $100 million not circulating, they will notice it. Manufacture's slightly bigger than that percentage, but that includes the meat and dairy processing firms. So, you know, if there is a reduction in stock numbers and a reduction in production, then that's likely to have a flow-on effect through there as well. I also find it rather ironic that the Southland Regional Development Strategy sort of emanated from this building and a couple of other local councils. And funnily enough, they want more development and more population. Good luck. So Peter Gluckman, in his report, I've got an article with me, not the full report, all human activity, this is a quote, all human activity has an impact on the environment. And I'm not going to argue that. It just needs to be a fair and balanced approach going forward. A recent MB, Ministry of Business, report, Southland GDP has grown strongly to expansion of dairy production. Now, that's come at a cost. I'm not going to deny that. But that's what you folk have to weigh up. Southland's responsible for 14.5% of New Zealand's total exports. And GDP per capita a couple of years ago when these numbers were done is number 3 out of 16 regions. So we punch above our weight. We've done well, we do well, and be careful what you wish for, I guess. So, a bit more specifically about this plan, I found it very much a rules-based approach. And you could say that's sort of old-fashioned thinking and driven by an army of bureaucrats. It's probably going to lead to a whole lot of litigation, which is good for the economy and the town. It will and has led to a drop in confidence in the rural sector. And investment follows confidence. So a drop in confidence is not good for investment. And again, we need investment if we're going to fix any of these issues and develop the province going forward. So it's a case of who pays and who benefits. Specifically, an example, Rule 23, page 52, I'm not going to dig it out, but it's the intensive winter grazing and slopes. You know, 20 degree slope, well, if you're a kilometre from a drain, you still need a consent, or can the local farm owner actually manage it to his best ability? If you've got a 20 degree slope in a paddock that might be close to a drain, but it doesn't constitute a large percentage of that paddock, what are you going to do? Set it aside, leave it? So, some of these things just aren't quite practicable in my view. I don't need to remind anyone that water does run downhill and there's nothing we're going to do to stop that. And I guess if you had a rainfall event like they had in South Canterbury a month ago when there was 100 millimetres in 4 hours in parts of inland South Canterbury, I'd suggest there's no farm, mitigation strategy that is going to cope with that. It is a Southland Land and Water Plan. It doesn't capture all land. It is specific to certain areas, larger than smaller. It is silent on the towns, the city, and as such, I'd suggest, I haven't done any work on it, but it might be open to legal challenge on the basis that the responsibility is for a Southland Land and Water Plan, not just a large farm or specific sector of the community. I question the need to map all the tile drains. Now, it might be good practice, and I know where most of them are. It's called IP. One day it might get written down. But for what purpose? Now, if we get to limit setting and you want to know what's going where, again, why can't we just have an outcome-based approach rather than all this regulation and nonsense that requires a whole lot of consultants, a whole lot of time for really good for GDP, but not good for productivity. I'd also suggest that most farmers know more about the land and water behaviour and the critical source areas on their properties than anyone in this building, any other council building, Wellington, you name it. Especially if you've been on that property for a length of time. So that's sort of a broad sort of overview. I think at the end of the day, we're going to have to do this together. It seems to be a bit top-down. It seems to be you have gone out and consulted, you have listened, but it's still a confused, dictatorial, rules-based approach. I've touched on physiographic zones in my submission. I'm not going to talk about that now, except that my view is that Clint Risseman went and did some work for his own interest. It was fed into the system. They thought, this is marvellous. Why don't we run with this? No other council in the country has taken up that approach. There's a question mark over that, in my view. Stock exclusion, riparian planting. I mean, we've got 5 kilometres of creek on our farm and fenced most of it. There's one we haven't fenced, and it's an environment Southland drain that is cleaned out every 2 years. So if they want a fence, maybe they can fence it. That, of course, comes with unintended consequences because we've had an increase in gorse, broom, ragwort, you name it. So consequently, once or twice a year, we run up the creek with a spray gun and we tip chemicals, try to avoid the water, but you're targeting the weeds. Some of these weeds are on the noxious list that comes out of this very organisation. So if you went to the drainage team down the corridor, they would say that sheep grazing on drains actually improve the bank stability, keep the weeds down, and doesn't seem to get through to the policy department. Then why? Practices will change on farms. The intensive, and I'll talk about my own situation, Peggy squares, 500, 1,000 sheep on a very small patch of land. We've shifted to 3-day breaks. They're a bit more space, a bit less intensive, no soil erosion and degradation. We're doing the same on the swede crops. It's all direct drilled now, so that soil structure holds together. There's less runoff, there's less slop, you name it. We're not carting a tractor and baleage and hay through the paddocks and degrading the soil like we used to. It's all laid out. We are putting on more nitrogen than we were 3 or 4 years ago, and woe is me for being so terrible. But there was a thing called a clover root weevil came along and pinched the stuff we were getting for free. A good clover sward will put in 200 units of N, naturally. The weevil ate it. Now, we didn't go anywhere near putting 400 kilograms of nitrogen, of urea on to match that 200. Am I going to get a credit for that? No, but I'll try and get the clover going again. So it is a biodynamic system. I've planted more trees than I've ever cut down. And my late father used to say, what are you planting shelter for? He said, I spent all my life cutting the trees down, clearing the bush. So, just be happy you don't live long enough, you'll see it all go around again. So, what's my future view? I think sensors and data and science will play a large part going forward on every property throughout New Zealand. We'll chase value, not volume. Bearing in mind, people don't want to pay more for food. So, but that's what will happen eventually. We will chase value, not volume. And I think there'll be less monocultural systems. I think there'll probably be more collaboration between farmers and property owners to mitigate their responsibilities. And it could be that my neighbouring dairy farmer needs somewhere to put his effluent and I could get a gain from that. And I think those sort of things will evolve over time. Not because of a rules-based approach, but because it'll be the right thing to do and there'll be an economic benefit for both parties. And I guess as we get to limit setting by catchment, I wonder what happens to all these rules then, because it might actually be that the limit setting negates some of the stuff that's in this plan. So I was going to read in a summary, but I've probably gone on long enough and you've got it in front of you. My desired outcome from all this, bearing in mind that we are in this together, rural, urban, is that do away with so much of this specific rules-based approach. Have you put up a business management plan that encompasses stock type, stocking rates, fertiliser, environmental impacts, critical source areas, maps, the whole lot. But I want a 10 or 15 year consent. Because that's what you do for businesses around the town. And if the farming practice changes in that time, by a significant degree or outside of that parameters that I set in my business plan, I'll come back, renew it, seek another consent. And you don't need an army of inspectors to come around and trucks that are all paid for by ratepayers. Do it like we do with GST, tax and wages. The responsibility is on the business owner to get it right, and you're subject to a random order. What's wrong with that? Keep it simple, and I heard the previous submitter talk about that, because believe me, this is not simple. Be prepared to, and farmers will be equally prepared, to use scientific data over a longer time frame. And I'm not, as I say, going to debate whether the water quality is worse now than it was 20 years ago, but could be a lot better than it was 50 years ago. Could be a lot better than it was 150 years ago. Could be worse than it was 200 years ago. All I know is it is different. Set the parameters on what you're trying to achieve based on outcomes. Do not tell us how to farm. Just give us the parameters and the principles with which we can measure some outcomes, and then let human ingenuity and initiative take over. It's not going to happen quickly, so you need to give technology and science a chance to catch up. As I said, we're in it together, and ultimately you should be putting Southland first because that's who's paying the rates. Happy to take questions.
Thank you very much for that. Morris has started going.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your presentation. It was very informative. I did have a question about how to measure these outcomes. Who's going to measure them? How are you going to do that?
Happy to measure the water as it goes out in the boundary.
How do you know that we'll be capturing all the surplus nutrients, for example, that come off? Would you be happy with a program that was put in place that actually did that? I mean, that could be relatively expensive for an individual farm basis.
Well, again, over time, I think there's going to be sensors, and you could have sensors in the paddock, you're going to have sensors in the creek. That'll be data loggers straight to a cloud, it'll feed straight into this building, you name it. But you'll have to put it in context of soil holding, moisture holding capacity in the water, the rainfall over the previous week, you name it. I just think that you're taking a prescriptive rules-based approach on management practices across the whole province, and you're trying to break it up, but that could be argued as a divide and conquer type approach, is really just going to put the rural sector against certainly this organisation and probably against the urban sector.
Okay, thanks very much. That's good.
Good afternoon. Just in your submission, you're talking on Rule 23 in the conspicuous discoloration clause. You're wanting that removed. And you're mentioning in your submission the area may change considerably due to setbacks, critical source areas, etc. Were you referring to in an alternative way of dealing with the issue of?
I think that, take the second one first, that was in terms of winter crops.
Yep.
So if we have a setback that we lose a certain percentage of area that becomes unproductive or not utilised for crop that year, you'll go to those areas, and I could go to some on my farm that are dead flat, creek on two sides, so I only have to be 3 metres away from that, and I'll intensify it. Okay? So I'll grow a 30 tonne crop of fodder beet, and I'll put big animals on it, they'll destroy it, it's free draining, and it'll be pugged and panned for 2 or 3 years. I'll meet the requirements, but I won't have achieved a good outcome for the environment.
Thanks.
And the discoloration one, I think, if stock, or, well, not stock, but any water moving will be discolored. I flew across Canterbury when that flood was on, and I noted every major river was discolored.
Yeah, I had thought you may have been referring to a possible way of addressing these through the farm environmental management plan.
Well, I just think that becomes a bit subjective. I mean, what you call discoloured is probably different to what Lloyd calls discoloured, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for your submission, Murray. If I'm interpreting your preliminary comments that you started with, is it your contention that to get environmental gain can't be achieved without loss of value or loss of production?
In the long term, no. But I think there's a transition period, and I don't think we understand collectively what that will entail. So initially there'll be a loss of production, which could lead to a reduction in capital values, until the science and the technology gets to a point, and probably the product values get to a point where that can be offset.
So what's your advice on how we should engage in that process?
Make haste slowly.
Okay, so right. One of the things you emphasise with this is a rules-based approach that you see here. Have you had a good look at Appendix N and the farm management plans, and how do you see that working?
Well, I actually think that that's the way to go, and that's probably where I settled on the end. I would be happy to do a comprehensive farm management plan and go for a 10 or 15 year submission. And if you want to drive up the road, with a week's notice and come for a drive round in middle of July, hopefully it's a wet, cold day for the inspector, so they won't be there too long. But to review the paperwork, have a look at what's happening in practice, then, and make a report. It's what happens with farm assurance systems for supplying meat companies. It's what happens. I use the GST approach. I mean, you know, you do that every 2 months and hope you get it right, and if the phone goes, you'll find out where you made a mistake. So I don't think anyone sets out deliberately to destroy and degrade the environment. So put a framework and let human initiative take over and do its bit.
Okay, thank you.
Lord? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Picking up the point on the Appendix N or the farm management plans, have you done any yourself with the staff, or do you have one at the present time?
No, it's on the list of things to do, Lord.
And is that something that, through the discussion that you've taken us through, that either in the making that plan or afterwards, you're quite happy to work with, e.g. Environment South and staff, to actually formulate up, so there's actually some robustness in that plan, which actually reflects back to the principles set out in the objectives and the rules?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's easy for some, well, it seems easy for someone to be sitting in here looking at a map and say, well, this is what should happen, it should happen, given the topography based on the map and their knowledge of the area. But as I say, the people living and working on the land know what happens when there's an inch of rain overnight. You know, we'll work out our own mitigation strategies to combat the fact. Now, if there's 3 or 4 inches of rain overnight, plan A, B, C, and D won't work. It's just water runs downhill. Sorry.
Okay. Just picking up on your approach has been that you'd rather have, if I'm thinking of intensive winter grazing, you'd rather have a percentage rather than a fixed area. But I'm just unclear by your notes where you think that should be.
Well, I just think that it was an arbitrary number. I think I put it something that...
You put in 10 or 20,
so
I think.
I might have 10% of my total land area needed for winter grazing of my stock. Someone with half my area might have 20%. So does he get an advantage? Because he by that very fact. Whereas if I wanted to do 20%, I'd have to get a consent. So it just, I'm not going to tell you the answer, I'm just saying that it just seems wrong.
So your approach to that as a percentage would be a better reflection in land size than
yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and no further questions, but just an observation. I find it interesting that you think the plan's silent on towns and cities. Next Tuesday, we're having the territorial authorities to come in and tell us what their concerns are with the stormwater and wastewater management provisions in the plan. They're bringing along 14 witnesses and they're going to take all day to do that. So I don't think the plan's silent on towns and cities at all.
It's good they're taking note because,
All right, thanks very much.
Those costs will have to fall on someone.
Not Kinnan family.